5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Thank you. American. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Money for nothing.
The all-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the new Panic Room episode 223 on the 11th of February. Somebody didn't press the button. I think that was me, but I pressed it now, so we're on, and that's exciting. So, yeah, it is. It's another Thursday. Time is just rolling on, I guess. Year two of COVID, so that's exciting. It's a whole other year to look forward to. But hey, you know, it's. I think it's one of those. It is what you make of it. One thing, I'm glad I'm not back in England right now, because they literally shut the whole country down. So at least we get to get out and about a little bit here, because Texas. Nobody tells us Texans what to do. But anywho, I have missed her this past week, so I think we should. apologise for the little bit of dead air there. It was the best intro I've ever done. And then I realised I hadn't pressed the button. I thought, this is gold. Oh, this is award-winning. This is award-winning. And sadly, it is lost because I didn't. But that's the thing, you know, because I'm a bloke, you know, I really should be banned from multitasking. I must admit, I was doing that, mm-hmm. and I was reading about the sad death of Larry Flint, the guy had a good innings, but what a life that guy had, you know. So, it's sad. He wasn't COVID. It was heart failure or whatever. But he was 78. But you know, somebody who wasn't afraid to buck the system and speak up for himself. So, you know, rest in peace,
that's probably
Larry.
Because
fuck COVID. I remember, it's funny actually, in a past life, I actually knew his daughter Teresa quite well. So that's my claim to fame anyway. But I remember seeing the Woody Harrelson movie, the People vs. Larry Flint. Brilliant, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm going to have to get his autobiography, but getting the time to read it is another matter. But a truly inspirational guy, you know. A lot like Stephen Hawking of the porn world, you know, because obviously they were both in wheelchairs. that's really the only parallel, to be honest. And they weren't afraid of upsetting people. You know, Hawking was a renowned atheist who didn't kowtow to, you know, the religious lot, who, you know. Which is something I still struggle with. I mean, we're looking at the terrible, terrible 100 vehicle pileup in Fort Worth yesterday. Only like, I think it's 5 people died, 7 people. It was absolutely terrible because of the icy conditions and what have you. And of course, people pay. We're praying for the people of Fort Worth. Well, pray to who? You know, somebody, please, somebody call and explain to me in a situation like that. Who do you pray to? You know, if you believe in one God, the omnipresent God who, you know, does everything and oversees everything, he's the one who fucking caused it. So, why? And what good is that going to do? Maybe,
you know,
I'm missing the point. Maybe I'm missing the whole point. I don't know. It's never made sense to me. Again, I apologize to anybody who's listening. I don't know. Anybody who's listening. I just don't get it. Seriously.
Well,
even, I mean, I was raised... Church of England, thanks to, you know, Henry VIII and the dissolution of the monasteries, etc., etc. The excommunication. Yes, I know all about that. You know, but I was brought up, you know, CV. We did. The vicar used to come and do assembly every Thursday, and even then, even in my infant school years, I never got it. Just didn't make sense to me. And some days I wish it did. I do. I really do. It's like the whole we had this conversation before. It's like ghosts and all that. You know, I'd love to believe. I really, really would love to believe, but I don't. But I just can't. Maybe it's the scientist part of my brain. Until there's that concrete proof. I've always said, you know, when God buys me a pint, then I shall believe in him.
You know, I have talked about it before on the show, but I was raised you know, Southern Baptist, and you know, I had a rough childhood, and you know, there were times that's what got me through was praying to God. So, you know, that's on the flip side there, and it didn't. Yeah, it didn't take.
I'm a big believer in living like live. You know that. You know me well. You probably know me better than most people right about now, but. If it helps you through, you know, if it helps you, but it's when people inflict it on other people, you know, people look down on you, people judge you, people treat you and I've said it before here, where around where I live, being an atheist is, you know, is worse than being an Islamic fundamentalist pedophile, to be honest.
Right,
you know,
right. I can
it's
see
one
that.
Of those things,
yeah.
You know, you have a conversation with people and, you know, they'll ask you what you earn And then they'll ask you what church you go to, both of which I'm not prepared to discuss with somebody I've just met at a kiddies party. And then, of course, the next question
right.
is, why are you at this kiddies party? And yeah, then I have to leave before the police turn up and it gets all the rest of it, or it gets very... I'm not signing that bloody register again, I can tell you. So, yeah, it's a weird one, and, you never know. One day I might have a road to Damascus moment and be converted.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Between
thoughts,
you and me.
Thoughts and prayers.
I very much doubt it. I do, but, you know, who knows? Who knows? After this past year or so, I'm prepared to believe or accept pretty much anything. Who would say? You know, I remember I sat in a moment of introspection just the other day thinking, well, who'd have thought it? Like, yeah, say 2 years ago. Who'd have thought it that we'd have been through a whole year? Because it's about, you know, it's about a year now, a whole year of. It's funny if I'm ghostwriting a novel at the moment and it takes place at the beginning of 2020. And this was planned out at the back end of 19. So, you know, nobody knew.
Yeah.
And so I'm having to sort of build in mentions of the virus and bits and pieces. So, yeah, who'd have thought? You know, we've been with masks and it's now, and this is what we're, it's now the normal. It's normal for the kids. It's normal for us. We accept it. And I think, you know, again, all the conspiracy theories aside, I think it is sad that this is our life now. We accept that, on Saturday night, the restaurants are shut at 9 o'clock. I mean, for fuck's sake, you can't go to a bar, you can't go to a club, you can't do this, you can't do that. And it's just like, what?
You know, it was the memories that come up on Facebook, you know, from a year ago. I just saw one a couple of days ago when we were doing a grocery shopping, and we saw, and this was not too many people were in the masks yet. You saw a few, but not, many. And there was a woman with the shield, the whole, you know, face shield going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember all of us just like, oh my gosh. And I think it was then that I started having nightmares about apocalyptic worlds and stuff. And I think it got kind of scary for me right then, because I was like, oh my gosh. And yeah, you know, a year later and now, in our area, when we go anywhere, I tell you, I'm not even exaggerating. 98% of the people there have masks. And yet they're telling us that our area is like this giant hotspot, and you know the numbers are outrageous. And well, if the masks work and 98% of the people I'm seeing have them, why are our numbers crazy? I don't understand it. I really don't.
Exactly. Well, I've said it before. Me and my to fancy Panda Express last night. So we went, but he drove me to Panda Express. And it's funny, you know, you're there, and the guy behind, you know, they put the extra bit of Perspex, because, you know, the virus is that big, it could get through the window otherwise.
Right.
He's there, and he's got it, and we were watching him, you know, and there was the car front pulled up, and, you know, you've got to put your card in the plastic tray of cleanliness. So he did put the credit card in there, because he picked it up with his gloves on that he's worn all shift, processed it, put it back in the plastic tray of cleanliness, handed it back. The guy then picked that up. So now that card has got whatever is on that guy's hand from every card he's touched, every bit of, you know, every food bag he's handed over for his entire shift. Then we pull up. I put my card, which has been, to be fair, it's probably been up my nose a couple of times. The dog's probably licked it, or the dog's licked my hand. You know, it's also, God knows what on my credit card. You know, that goes in the, unless there is something inherently cleansing about the plastic tray of cleanliness. It could be that. Maybe that just obliterates everything. But and then, of course, he picked it up with his gloves, same gloves. But, and it's just like, this is really, this. And then, of course, you know, I fished my card out of my wallet. Where's the first thing I put it? I'm folding my wallet back up. In my mouth. Hold it in my mouth. It's in my mouth.
Oh, God.
In the plastic tray of cleanliness. Then it's with the guy. This thing's been in my mouth. It's literally just been left. And then, of course, he handled it. The poor person in the car behind me is getting my juice on his credit card and his dinner. And
oh,
it's like,
God.
This is crazy. And yet, you know, it's just it's the false sense of security that, oh, I've got my gloves on and I've got my mask on. I'm going to be safe.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you're not. And I take your point. If everybody's wearing masks, why are people still getting sick? The thing is that people, they wear the mask. It's the same as, like, the cold, the flu. It's transmitted more by touch, by contact, by, you know, somebody scratches their nose or whatever, opens the door, you then hold, you know, open the door, except that sort of your touch and on the clothes and that sort of thing, then breathing and sneeze. Okay, somebody sneezes in your face. Yeah.
How often does that happen, though? I mean, you know,
when you have small children, a lot, but adults tend not to sneeze in your face. You know, I mean, you don't do that.
Yeah, no, I've made that point before, too. And you hear that all the time by the people who are so for the masks. It's the droplets, the droplets. Okay, I get that. But in my adult life, I cannot tell you the last time somebody sneezed on me other than my own child. And, you know, to be honest, it was about a year and a half ago that my own child sneezed on purpose directly into my eyeball. And I did get sick. So, you know, there's that. But other than that,
just backtrack a little bit. Small children, small children, and all that. And in the grocery store, and generally, who is exempt from wearing a mask?
Small children. Yeah.
Who are the most disease-riddled, disgusting, boundaryless creatures on the face of this planet, and yet they don't have to wear a mask. They should be quarantined. They should be all of them, not just the immigrant children. They should all be in cages now, to be honest.
That's
they should all
another
be caged
one of my,
and kept away from that, you know, everybody.
That is another one of my pet peeves when we go out, when I see these families and they're all masked up and their little child doesn't have it on. And I'm thinking, I even do it now. When we pass them, I just whisper, I guess that child's expendable, because, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if I was that terrified and I was like, oh, my God, we all have to wear masks. Oh, except for little Susie. She's fine. I don't understand. That makes
sense. What you should do is just whisper in little Susie's ear, look, you're not wearing a mask because your parents don't want you.
Yes. I'm serious. I mean, oh, God, I can imagine. Mom, do you remember when everybody wore masks? Well, yes, Susie. Well, why didn't I have one?
Because we hate you. We hate you. You horrible, parasitic, little, terrible thing, and we hate you. Anyhow, I'll finish this segment by saying I do have my own children. Everyone else has not so much. I do, because I am biologically predisposed to love my child. I have to. It's programmed as a parent. It is programmed. It's the one thing. It's the only thing that stops from murdering them some days, I think. But anywho, I'm assuming we have a rip-roaring show this evening, Xtina.
We do. I'm very excited. Our first guest. I've not read her, and I can't wait to. I'm looking forward to it. Author. She's a romance author, Myra Statham. And
awesome.
Later
like
on,
like a romance.
Yeah, yeah. And later on in the show, I'm going to grill you about your book that was just republished. So I'm excited on all fronts there. So yay!
Yeah, wow. So we were really struggling for a second guest this week then. Fair enough.
No, we are.
Let's wheel Jimbo out. He's cheap. Not a problem. Not a problem. Anyway, let's. I think without further ado, we should introduce our first guest.
Okay, our first guest of the night is romance author Myra Statham. Woo!
Good evening.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
We're belligerent this evening. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, sometimes we get going and then we, you know, time loses all meaning and we're like, oh gosh, you know, so yeah, I get so worked up sometimes about some of the issues going on right now.
I know, like, oh. I know.
It's easy
well,
to
a lot
do
to talk
though.
About right now, you know, like in the world right now, it's crazy.
Oh God, is it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, in every show we say we're not going to talk about any of this today. We're not going to do any of it, and here we are. And so,
right, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Before we
talk about it. Yeah, I mean it's on the other side of the coin. What else is there to talk about? It's our lives now, you know. But before we get into obviously discussing your book, Myra, the Roast and Toasted, I have to ask. I mean. As a writer, as an author, you know, obviously writing anything contemporary now. Anything you're working on, are you building in the whole COVID thing, or are you just merrily pretending it didn't happen?
I am not.
Yay!
I feel like romance, especially in romance, it's an escape, and
mm-hmm.
I think personally, I don't think I could write about just. Difficult the situation is right now. Maybe post COVID I could,
mm-hmm.
but I think even in writing it, it's been an escape for myself to write it
yeah.
as like back to like normal times. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think
definitely,
you know, cause it's crazy. You're quarantined. You all of a sudden, you know, I have three kids, so I'm distance learning. They're all here all the time.
Oh my goodness!
You know. I feel like I'm cooking at all the time. You know, I'm making breakfast,
mm-hmm.
lunch, and dinner. It's a nonstop. You don't get a break. You're working. I mean, don't get me wrong. 2020 was super productive for me writing-wise. I have
mm-hmm.
no idea how. I think it was just because of that escape, you know, like being able to get words in and just escaping into different worlds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it – that's why personally I couldn't do it. I can't read them. I've checked out a couple of romance novels because I love reading romance. I'm a total romance junkie, and I've tried to read ones where they're in quarantine, and it just gives me anxiety. So
yeah,
mm-hmm.
I just
yeah.
you know. So yeah, I haven't though. I can see myself doing it later. I just can't right now.
I think yeah, it's one of those things that you can't ignore. As I said, I'm actually ghostwriting. It's a crime thriller, and
mm-hmm.
it's set in New York, and it's set at the beginning of it starts the beginning of last year. That's purely because it's the second in a series, and the first one's set in the early 90s, and this like so, and it goes. February into March, so I've had to sort of at least mention it, you know, because and oddly enough, it's actually based around the Chinese gangs in New York. So obviously, there's the anti-Chinese sentiment was starting to come through, and I've had to mention that. But I'm with you. I mean, if I was to write, you know, if I'm actually working on my own novel, I'm not bit by bit. Do I go back and rewrite it for the COVID times? I mean, I almost feel like I should. But then again, it's actually set in an old folks home. So really, technically, none of it could happen because they're all quarantined. They're all, you know, literally locked in their rooms. So it would
right,
be the dullest,
right.
dullest book, I think.
Right. So here in nursing homes, they have floating nurses. So that's how a lot of nursing homes got COVID
mm-hmm.
patients. because they had the floating nurses that go from one location to another. Yeah, like, you know, like Mary typhoid.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I can definitely agree with that, that I wouldn't set, you know, and that, I think about that when I'm watching TV or I see a commercial and they're starting to, in the commercials, be masked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, when are we going to see a TV show when they're out and about and they all have this? Think,
actually,
that's the scary part. That's the scary part. I think there's...
A guilty secret, man. I like the show Superstore, the comedy. Yeah, I catch it on Hulu. And it's about life in a superstar.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's fun. And this most recent season, they all wear masks. When they're out on the boat, they're all wearing masks. And I just don't like it. Because... I don't know. Because, again, I've said this before. Because most of their face is hidden. You miss a lot of the nuance. It's just like watching. It's like watching Thunderbirds, you know, the Gerry Anderson show. So they're just puppets with no facial expressions. It's like watching that.
That's me.
Yeah. Even
the Elmo smiling all the time, creepily.
Yes. Even on the news, they had a woman who had her mask on, and nobody's even close to her. I'm like, are you serious? You know, I mean, I couldn't understand what she was saying because of the stupid mask. And it's just, I hate the fact that they're trying to normalize it as much as they are. And as you know, Myra said she might want to, you know, write about it at some point, you know, afterwards. And I'm thinking, is there going to be an afterwards? And that to me is the most frightening part. Is they're trying to normalize it as much.
You know, when it happened in what was it, 1920, 1918, they got through that, and we'll get through it eventually, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody, I mean, they lord that everybody wore masks and everything. 50 million people died in the Spanish flu. And, they wore masks, you know, and they said, everybody wear them. But so I guess it kind of tells a tale, really, doesn't it?
Yikes, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. We should move right along here. And on that bright note, Maya, you're here to talk to us about your book, Roasted and Toasted. And is it a rom-com?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's a rom-com contemporary romance. It takes place in a fictional small town in California called Mountain Lake. And it's the last book of that series that was kicked off back in July with Booked and Hooked. So,
tell us a little bit about it.
The whole series is three best friends, ex-military guys, in this small town, and all three of them are, you know, been bachelors, and one by one they fall. And this is the biggest, you know, he's a giant, tatted up, bearded. His, you know, nickname has always been Grizz. And he falls for the new resident in town who owns, you know, the new coffee shop. And it goes from there. And they just, you know, he finally sacks up and mans up and takes a chance.
I do love a good romance. You know, it's funny because mostly, you know, I've always tried to, I'm, you know, scary and I like horror, and that could not be actually further from the truth. I love to, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was last year, I read a rom-com that was set in like Christmas time, and I was such a big baby, I cried through the whole thing, and it was, you know, tears of, you know, the sweets. Oh, it's so cute, and I'm crying, and you know, so I do love a good romance. I do. As far as like the different genres in the romance, do you always write in like the kind of rom-com-ish, or do you have any other?
I've done a lot of different ones. I've done new adult with my Kappa Suite series, which is like a sorority, you know, the seniors in that sorority falling in love with the different guys in the college, you know, and then I have small town. another small town series. And I also have a seasoned romance, which all of them are, the age range of my main characters range from 40 to 67.
Wow.
Yeah. And that one was inspired by two of my aunts. They were, they found themselves single after 50 for the first time and in a long time for different reasons. And it made me want to write, you know, older characters. Yeah, it was a lot of fun writing those. Let's see what else do I. It's all romance. It's just different, you know, like the subgenres, like you're saying. And I have two bikers coming up.
I love bikers.
Yeah.
Now, with the new adult, I have to, you know, because I have the younger kids and, well, not younger anymore. I have a 17 and a 22-year-old. And the 22-year-old was schooling us a couple weeks ago on some of the hip lingo of the day. And, we need, like, a study sheet or something. So, like,
right?
When you're writing the new romance, do you, or the new adult, do you, like, include some of the, you know, bruh? And,
dude,
I mean, some of the,
salty,
some of the,
yeah, you know, you have to, like, Urban Dictionary, I feel, is, like, dated for the now.
Yeah. Me and the boyfriend were just, you know, messing with her the rest of the day, and we're talking about how fire everything was, and, you know, that was fire, and that was lit, fam, and oh god, it's so bad.
But
oh,
being
gosh.
In California, the bro was, it's always been here, so that's not that new, and it's also been in because everything comes back, you know, like in the Fast and the Furious series, in the movies, that was, you know, Tyrese's, like, thing that he always used to say is bruh. And it just comes back, you know, like, dude, bruh. Now there's the salty, it's salty. You know, I have to look it up, though, I do, or watch TikTok videos and learn.
Oh. It's so bad. And, you know, you say that it comes back. I'm hoping that someday Wicked comes back. I loved Wicked. Man, that's Wicked. Yeah.
What do you mean comes back? What do you mean comes back? Wicked never went, did it? I still say that.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I don't think the kids.
That's why my kids look at me funny. That could be it.
Yeah, I think so. Well. Well, Myra, I want to hear more of Roasted and Toasted. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Yeah.
Yay!
Let me get that.
See, it's my turn to drink some wine, you know, when you're doing your reading.
Yeah, I drank some while I was listening to you guys talk. That accident was gnarly. That was crazy. Okay, so let me go ahead and I got it. Chapter 1, Barry Grizz Griswold. I stepped foot into Buzzy's coffee shop, and like always, an overwhelming peace washed over me, a calm like I had never known. It had nothing to do with the scent of the freshly roasted and ground coffee beans. Hell no. I liked coffee as much as the next guy, but my sudden zen mode was all about the woman serving it, the woman who had made me a bumbling idiot before she opened her doors to Buzzy's coffee shop. I stood off to the side after I walked in, the shop busier than it usually was early in the morning. I tried to blend into the background so I could take a moment to watch her. Not that it was possible for a guy my size to do that. Either way, I was gifted for a spare moment and my eyes soaked her up. Her hair was tossed up at the top of her head. Dark locks were wrapped up in a messy looking bun. A red bandana was folded up and wrapped around her head, giving her a retro vibe. Her gaze was focused on the cash register, but I didn't need to look at her eyes to know their color. I dreamt of her hazel gaze. Jackie had the most beautiful eyes I had ever seen. When she had bumped into me a couple of weeks ago, I thought they were a light brown, but I was wrong. There was a wide range of colors that swam in her stare. Greens and gold swirled along and grew more intense depending on her mood or what she wore. which was always something colorful. It was like the woman chose a color of the day and ran with it. Today was red. I had never been a fan of the color until the first time I had seen her in it. Then again, any color she wore was suddenly my new favorite. Her head popped up, and I took notice of the bright red lipstick that made my dick strain harder than iron behind my jeans. Yep, today was a lady in red kind of day. I knew the moment I got home, I would think about those red lips, that red mouth leaving a cherry-stained ring around my cock as I imagined her taking me into her mouth while I jerked off to the thought of her. She would be between my legs, perched on a fucking pillow because there was no way I would ever let her knees touch the bare ground. Barry, she snapped me out of my dirty fucking thoughts, and I jerked my chin toward her. Grab a seat, she beamed, and I was about to tell her she didn't have to do that, but I could see by the glimmer in her eyes that she wasn't going to take my futile argument. I'll bring you your usual. I had been that way since day one. Bumped into one another, she had looked up at me, my hands on her shoulders so she wouldn't fall, and I was the one who had been a goner. She apologized, and I helped her finish bringing in the supplies she had been hauling in. She made me a coffee, one way too sweet for my taste, blended, topped with whipped cream and caramel sauce, but I drank it like it was the best thing my mouth had ever tasted. She assumed that was my favorite, and somehow it had become my usual. The usual she brought over to me after sending me to sit down. The usual I drank as she sat with me every damn day for the last month. Thanks, I rumbled, and walked past the customers as I made my way to our usual table in the back. Somehow, I had no idea how, maybe luck or not, it was always empty and clean, no matter what time I showed up, like it was waiting for me. I sat down and pretended to stare at my phone, but my attention was on her. She was wearing a red and plaid top over a white tank that showed off her beautiful curves. She smiled and laughed with her customers, making them all feel welcome and taken care of, seen, just like she made me feel, which was fucking ridiculous. I stroked my beard. I was a fucking giant. Everyone saw me. But when Jacqueline Mendoza looked at me, I felt like I was looking right in, like she was looking right into me. Her girl handed me her overly sweet blended concoction along with an iced glass of water, and I knew it was about to be my favorite part of the day. Quickly silencing my phone, I slipped it into my pocket and watched, my attention on her and her alone. The sway of her hips, the bounce of her breasts, the tilt of her lips as she focused on carrying the drinks, almost like she was biting back a smile. Her bright eyes couldn't hide. She reached the table and I stood taking the drinks from her and leaning forward to kiss her cheek. The softness of her skin made my lips tingle, the scent of vanilla and sugar making my mouth water. I needed to take my own goddamn advice when it came to making a move. I had been busting my business partner and best friend's balls for a while about it. When we pulled away, she sat down and I stayed standing. Barry? I hated my name. Always had. It was my dad and his dad's name. Both grade A pompous assholes. But when she said it, it was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard. To have dinner with me, I found myself fucking finally asking. I took a seat, and by the look on her face, she had definitely not been expecting that question. Dinner like a date or dinner like two friends hanging out, she asked, one of her eyebrows slightly higher than the other, her entire face void of emotion, not giving away a trace of what she would prefer. Not that I was going to give her an option. A date, Jackie. Would you like to go on a date with me? I asked, being clear of my intentions. Time slowed as I looked at her. It would really fucking suck if she said no. Slowly, I watched her eyes brighten into a caramel color as her face broke into a fucking smile I felt in my chest and goddamn heart, one I thought was useless until the day she crashed into me and warmed over. I thought you would never ask, she grinned, drinking her ice water and taking the weight of the world off my shoulders. Oh yeah, I lamely said, my attempt at flirting, but she nodded and her cheeks turned a shade of pink beneath the natural tan of her skin. I fucking loved. Yeah, I was almost starting to worry you had friend-zoned me. I chuckled at her words and reached for her hand. Fuck. It was tiny and delicate and so fucking silky soft that my dick jerked behind my jeans, wishing to get close to her. Tomorrow work for you, I asked. Her warm fingers stroked the top of mine. In that moment, it was just us. The world around us fading away. There was no sound of coffee grinders running or blenders blending. There was no rustle and bustle of the customers who were probably waiting on her. It was just me and her, her lower lip, lips that I would definitely be tasting tomorrow. Good, I mumbled, taking a sip of my sweet coffee with my free hand, and the panic slowly set in. Where the hell did you take the girl of your dreams? And that's it.
I love it. I love it. That's so sweet. Now, my question for you is, this series is three guys, right? The three guys that were military, I think you said.
Right.
What made you choose to write in the guy's point of view? Or do we flip back and forth? Do we have both?
You flip back and forth. Yeah, you flip back and forth. Every chapter has his POV and then her POV, but it doesn't repeat time-wise. Does that make sense? Like,
it
just keeps
going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find it difficult to get into your main guy's character, their head? Do you find that difficult?
Sometimes. I think I had a tougher time when I wrote my older characters than when I've written the younger ones. But it depends on what they do. But this is my, I have like 41 books right now.
Wow. I had no idea.
So
wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. I started in, my first published one was in 2014.
Wow.
So I've been doing it almost 7 years. But yeah, what took me time, I think, was my tenses, honestly. Like, first person or third person.
Right.
But yeah, but no, getting into their minds, their heads wasn't tough. What was tough was when I decided to do in a new adult book series.
Mm-hmm.
That was tough because I was not a fan. I would not be a fan of myself, of my 20 something year old self. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Right, like I would cringe. I would not want to read her. So I write more of, who I wish I would have, could have been at that time if I was,
right, Right.
Because
I totally get that.
End of the world at that age,
Oh God, yes.
He didn't call, and you can't think of anything else. Like, there's not it's just too dramatic. Back then.
Awful years. I definitely know I have a 22-year-old now, and oh my God, yeah, I can't wait until she's older, and yeah, that's an awful time. It really, really is. But
it's hard to be figuring out who you are.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Now, with so many, here's a good one for you, with so many books, and see, I have I write poetry, and I have five books published.
Yeah, you write a lot of books.
I've
checked you guys out.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know how many now. How many books, James? How many books are Hellbound have now? I don't know. It's quite a lot.
Oh, Hellbound! it's well over 100 now. Well over 100.
Yeah. But as far as your personal, your stories and your characters, after so many, but do you have like a favorite? I mean, people ask me that occasionally. What's your favorite of the books that you've written? And it's hard. It's almost like somebody asking you what's your favorite child. And even though you may have a favorite, you still don't want to you don't want to say it and sell out your other ones. Yeah, I know. But so do you have like a favorite characters or a favorite book that you're like, oh, this one will always be, super special. Anything like that?
I would have to say, because I do full length and I do novellas.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say my favorite full length was it's a book called Lie, and
mm-hmm.
it is it's the first it started off as just like, oh, I'm just gonna write this one book, and it turned into a four book series, and there's the characters are just so special. Like, I feel like I really poured in different parts of myself in that. In the different characters, like I'm the oldest of three, and I put in a sister in there, and I put all my horrible qualities as her qualities, you know. But she, you know, she's very protective of her sister. She doesn't have a story in that series, but she's like a supporting character, you know. And I think I just added a lot of diversity into that series, and especially you know, because that book was the kickoff point of it. So that one is just very, I think, just very special, because it just flowed really, really well. It just went so easily for being a 90,000 word book, you know.
We talked about that on our show last week, how us authors will incorporate parts of ourselves and parts of our world and parts of, you know, the people that we know and stuff into our work, and that, you know, a lot of times when I find myself reading something, I'm always, now I am anyway, I'm always questioning, I wonder what parts of this is actual truth, because almost, I mean, I think a lot of it is now, you know, I mean, even as fiction as it is, I think that there is so much truth in everything that we write, even if we don't acknowledge it or, you know, but I definitely think it's there. Yeah. Yeah. And I find myself when I'm, especially when I read poetry now, because I know how I write and I know how real it is and how visceral, I'll read somebody else and I'm like, I wonder if this is true.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
how this is true. Because, you know, the way that we read things, we interpret it as one possibility, but they could be writing about something completely different, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely true. So when you aren't writing, when you're with so many books out, I don't know when that could ever be, but what do you like to read? Like, who do you like to read?
Oh, who do I like to read? I love Winter Chamber books, Aurora Rose Reynolds. I love Susan Mallory, Jill Chalvez, Kristen Ashley. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these.
I know her,
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. I've met her. Have you ever met her?
I haven't, no. Oh, still trying to get her on the show.
She is... Like, you know how sometimes they tell you don't meet your heroes, or like don't meet, like, you know, that person, like, you know, when they ask you that question, like, who would you invite to dinner, or who'd you want to have dinner with? Mine was always her, Kristen Ashley. I love the range of her books, her stories, the way she tells her stories, her characters. They got me through this like crazy, you know, just hard times. Right. And, her happily ever afters are just phenomenal. And I got the chance to go out because she had, you know, back, gosh, this was like in 2015, I want to say, 2016, she has a Rock Chick Rendezvous. And it was crazy to me. It was a free event where you go, you know, you stood in line and you waited for her to sign your book and stuff. And it was, it was a room full of people, Christina, and you could literally look to your front, your back, your right, and your left, and you could have a conversation with all these different types of people who came from all sorts of different places. There was somebody from Denmark. There's people from all over Arizona, you know, all over the country. And you connected with them through her books and stuff. She is the sweetest person. I've seen her at two different events, and she has a smile literally for the first person all the way through the last person. And I've seen her like go a whole hour after the event has ended to get to that last person in line, and has given them her full attention. Does that make sense? Like, it's just, she's
it
amazing.
Does.
Like,
yeah. Awesome.
She is such an incredible person. I was a blubbering idiot because I was just like so shy. I was like, oh my God. And I was like, okay, I need to stay cool. I was fine. And like met her, I had all my books to give to her, and I literally like bumped everything on her table.
I love it.
I was just so clumsy. I was just, you know, I get so shy. in person. And I had gone to the dinner that she had hosted, and because you buy, you know, dinner ticket or whatever. And she sat next to me, and I could not get myself to talk. I felt like I was like, oh my gosh, she's right there.
That's so sweet. I love that. I'm going to have to work harder to get her on the show. But
I highly recommend her and her books. Like, yeah.
Definitely. Well, we had so much fun with you on the show, Myra. I wish we had more time. I think we're just about out of time for our first segment.
Unfortunately.
Tell us where we can find you online.
On Amazon, Facebook, Instagram, BookBub, Goodreads, all that goodness.
Yay. All right, everybody, go out and buy Roasted and Toasted by Myra Statham, and we will definitely have you on the show again. We had a lot of fun. Thank you for coming
on
the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good evening. Bye-bye, Myra.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Wow, that flew by. I like a bit of steamy. I like a bit of steam with my romance, as you well know.
You too.
Women write better as men than men write as women, I think. You know, men are just like,
definitely.
We're terrible. I include myself in that. I'm awful at that, but no, she did very well, and she, nice bit of steam. So anywho, speaking of steam, but it's not. I do need to go for wee wee. So it's cold enough. It may even steam. So you never know. I'll report back straight after this break.
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Act Two.
And my worst fear has finally come true after, like, how many years has it been now? I don't know if anybody can hear me out there because, you know, if James has not pushed the button, it's very possible that I'm just, like, talking into the void right now.
Ha, which, no, you know, not yet.
But, hey,
I'm sorry.
For the first time.
You did well. You did well. I just thought I'm going to listen to her for a little bit. See how well she was. Yes, you did it. A true professional.
I remember years ago, we had Stephen Helms, or you know Stephen Helms. He used to edit the show for us, and he said to me one time, he's like, you know, if there's ever dead air, just fill it with anything. It doesn't matter what it is, just start babbling. And I've always kept, you know, hung on to that for moments like this. So, I was going to keep babbling too, but I was hoping that
I should have seen how long I could hold out and how long you could babble for. But there you go. And to be fair, there have been times we have had genuine technical issues where you've had no option. You've just babbled, and you've done very well. You babble incredibly well, I have to say. So, Xtina, who is our next guest?
Our next guest is the amazing horror author James H. Longmire.
Do you know, I never mind that. I just have to say I've heard he is a great bloke. He's a really, and he's a nice bloke as well, you know, despite what everybody thinks. But seeing as though it's me, and we didn't do your show because I wanted to do mine this week. So here we go. Well, there you go. Thank you for having me on the show. It's very good. I know I'm only filling in because the real guest couldn't make it. But thank you for thinking of me.
I have to say that is not true. I could have easily gotten a guest for tonight, but, you know, it has been so long since either one of us has gotten to talk about our own self. I thought, you know, we should take some time
Because we're that busy with other people's stuff. We're selected, you know. But I am in the process of some of my dogs. What are you looking at? My dog's looking at me like, who the fuck are you talking to? You're crazy. I'm in the process of we are republishing there's nine. I thought it was eight, to be honest with you, but there's actually nine. Would you believe? All nine of my books under the Hellbound books. I've got them all in from the various publishers they're out with, and they're all re-edited and all brand new artwork by our good friend Kevin Earnhardt, who is I've worked him very hard actually on these, and they look phenomenal, and they're starting to roll out now. The first one went live at the weekend. It's called Buds, which was my second. No, it was. It beat Colton Forshay to the publisher by like a week. It's an erotic time travel horror novella. Would you believe? And that trope. I know it's been done to death. I know, you know, but it's. It's a good old. The funny bit about the funny story behind the story is I actually wrote many years ago. My first novel that had sort of an element of time travel to it, and that was shit. You know, and I sent it off to agents, and they said it was shit, and it was. It was terrible. You know, looking back, it was awful. But there's some of the ideas behind it. Sort of stuck with me, and the key idea behind Buds
is again, I'm sort of laying the groundwork for the excerpt, as you would put it. Is that
there's a P
in it. There is a P. I know there is. There is the P. Is that the guy invents time travel, but really he only manages to sort of go back in time like a fraction of a second. But a fraction of a second behind is this sort of alternate
different
universe. And what is happening each time he jumps back in time is the alternate universe just inches forward another fraction of a second. And it's slowly sort of creeping in. And it's populated, and this is where the erotica comes in, because I got a very... What's the word? A fascination, shall we say, with the concept of Siamese twins. Yeah, all right, don't judge.
No, never,
and
never.
Because I remember reading as a child about the Siamese twins, but the name was, it's conjoined twins now, okay, because we're all snowflakes, you know. But, you know, the Siamese, Chan and Eng, who were Siamese, and they were twins. And I remember reading about them as a kid, and they each married. They had a wife each, and they fathered children. And that kind of, I guess, appealed to the sort of perverted side of them. It's like, well, wow, you know, I mean, how does that work? Do you sort of have a threesome, a foursome? Do you pretend you're asleep while your conjoined twin is doing the business with his wife? I mean, I would love to. Something again. If anyone from Pornhub is listening, there is a notable absence of conjoined twin pornography. There needs to be a lot more, please. Not fake. I don't want fake. I want real. I want to find some conjoined twins, two sets of conjoined twins, and just get them to do things. That would be terrific. That I would watch that forever. But yeah, that part of it. How would that work? So the whole concept of these like alternate humans who and they're not actually conjoined. The story behind it is where we've had, you know, some of the fate of conjoined twins are sort of these creatures who've managed to jump into our time frame, and they reproduce by budding, like a hydra, or like, you know, a lot of the primitive creatures that just bud an extra, like an amoeba, just bud a bit off and create another person. So that all sort of came together into this mishmash, this time travel horror. And I'm really proud of it. Having gone through it again, having, you know, given it a bit of a polish and edited, I actually read it again for the first time in, God, 5 or 6 years, I'd say. And it really is rather good. It is steamy. It is very steamy.
Yeah.
There's lots of bums and willies in it, I have to say.
I pulled up the book on Amazon to take a look at the cover because I had not seen it. And I'm really digging it. I definitely need a copy, and I need you to sign it. That's XTI.
I think I know.
you got it by now. Yeah, I was reading I don't know if that's a tagline or The Love Child of an 80s Monster Movie and a Serial Killer's Wet Dream. I like that. I do like that.
That was actually, that wasn't me. I didn't write. That was actually from a genuine Amazon review. I was trawling through it.
Wow.
There must be a good quote somewhere, something that sums it up.
It's perfect.
And that really does. It is pretty much, you know, it's there's death and murder and intrigue and prostitution and perverted sex, and yeah, it's but it's good. I mean, it's I'm proud after all these years, and it's been, I think, 2015, 2016, it was actually published by Morbid Books. So I've got it back now and given her a polish. The new artwork, I mean, the cover before was very good, but the Kev's artwork is just phenomenal. It's just so. It's brilliant. So it's good. It's a good old tale of immorality, I'd say.
Now, you see, you know, hearing what it's about and stuff, and then thinking of Colton as well, they're both kind of bizarro. But then you but then you have like the other books. You have like Tenebrian and Flanagan, and they're very much not bizarro. Like, what, do you have a preference of what you like to write?
I mean, I do like bizarro because it's very freeing. I've said this before, you know, it's very no holes barred, no rules. You know, you can pretty much do what you want. But I don't know. It depends what. I just like writing a damn good story, you know, and whichever genre it falls within is what works for me. So I don't think I have a preference, is the honest truth.
I was just reading Bizarro, and I think what I love most about it, and I've said it before, is just that this is how things are, and there's no explanations or anything. You just, so I'm reading it, and like these crazy things are happening, and my mind is going, why is nobody questioning this? Why is, you know? And but that was the, I think even for myself, I have to just kind of, you know, grow with it, and it, even for the reader, it's a freeing moment as well, because you finally get to the point where you're like, ah, well, this is how it is now.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's kind of I like it. I do. It's definitely
In the Erotic Odyssey of Colton Forshay, you know, the alternate or the dream world that Colton visits is governed by a telepathic ocelot. And like you say, there's no explanation as to why or the backstory or anything. It just is, and that's it, and that's the world. And I must admit, I like ocelots, and I didn't realize until recently they are actually native to Texas. They do live in Texas, so but they're such. I mean, look them up. They're beautiful, beautiful cats. I mean, they're gorgeous creatures. So, but I just like them.
I always have done. Yeah.
So it's just a. Like I say, it's very Monty Python-esque, a lot of bizarre. It's just that you just throw the most bizarre thing at it, and yeah, that's what it is, and I like that.
I don't even know what I prefer to read now, because you know, there's always a you know, if you get too serious and you just, I'm just going to grab some bizarro and just escape, because that's the ultimate escape right there, I would think.
Yep, it is. Oh, definitely, yeah.
Now, you have to tell me where you are on your The Silverado. I don't know the title.
The Silverado Springs Memory Care Posse. I was thinking when we were talking to Myra earlier, I'm tempted to go back, because obviously I'm still working through it, so I'm trying to find literally almost like a page at a time. Do I go back and write it for the COVID times? Otherwise, it's just going to be dated. I don't know. I mean, I have that opportunity if I wanted to do that. And thinking about it, I was talking about, I mean, okay, yeah, they would be in lockdown, but that was the fact that they escaped the old folks home would make it even more exciting, you know, that they're not just escaping that, they're escaping lockdown, they're putting their lives at risk and all the rest of it. I don't know. I'm just that busy with other stuff at the moment. I will keep you. You'll be the first to receive a copy, I promise. In fact, you'll be editing it, so there's that.
Yes, when I read that, the short story, when I read that, those characters just stood out so much. Mm-hmm. I knew that they were so much more than just a short story, so I have been waiting for this for years.
Yeah, for years, I know, me too. Well, I just got that. Obviously involved with Hellbound, but I mean, we've just gone from strength to strength, and obviously did Ghost Rider. You know, I'm not just blowing my own trumpet. I'm in high demand as a ghostwriter now. So, and it's one of those things. You know, I keep thinking, well, you know, I'd love to be able to have the time to work on my own stuff. But then again, if I'm doing that, then that means I'm not doing paid writing. You know what I mean? So it's just like I need to be in a happy position where I can just say, right, I'm just going to take a month, I'm just going to do my own stuff, and it doesn't matter if I don't earn anything this month, but I'm working on that, but there you go.
and also with having Hellbound, with being a part of Hellbound, I don't think that I realized how fulfilling it is to work on this end of things as opposed to, you know, working on my own stuff. But mm-hmm. it is like, you know, whenever when we get a book out, and especially if it's, you know, something that we've worked hard on and, you know, we've been through every process of it, it's our baby too. It's not just the authors anymore. And I do mm-hmm. not think that I realized that beforehand, but it's definitely.
Yeah.
So even though we don't have a lot of time anymore to work on our own personal things, it's worth it, I think. Hellbound is growing.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
We've taken it from awesome. Literally nothing to where we are now with, I say, over 100 titles and, you know, growing strength to strength. So, and again, fingers crossed, you know, we have an anthology in the running for a Stoker Award this year. So fingers crossed for that one. So, anywho, would you like me to read my excerpt?
Oh, I forgot all about it. I would love it. Do you have an excerpt to read? I had to say that like that, you know.
No, I don't. No. Yes, I do. I had to trawl through for a bit that's not too steamy, I have to say. So hopefully this is not too steamy. Okay, right. So this is, the guy's, he's discovered this alternate world. He's made friends with this conjoined couple. So I like this bit because it's a bit of explanation, but it's the science behind it a little bit. So here we go. Right, are we ready? Here we go. Imagine time as one of those old-time slide projectors, Andrew explained to Guidry, his voice raised above the booming noise in the club. The kind of a carousel everyone had before everything got all electronic and PowerPoint. I'm not following you, Guidry shouted. He was strained to hear above the intrusive heavy beat, and his concentration was marred somewhat by the expert blowjob he was receiving from Kate. Andrew raised his voice still higher and gave Guidry a patient smile. Time exists in slices, each one like a slide in the carousel, he explained. Only now there are only two slides left, this one and yours. Which means, Guidry squirmed in his seat as Kate's tongue probed down the sensitive eye of his penis. Which means this is as far back in time as you can go, Andrew explained with a grin. It really is no big deal when you consider the fact that time is an abstract concept anyway, created to mark the passage of human life. It's a fact most people seem to forget when theorizing about time travel. A bit like developing theories about the tooth fairy, I guess. Guidry nodded as if he understood. Truth was, he was still struggling to take all of it in. What with this being his only second trip back in time. Hell, he wasn't even sure how much of Kate stroke Andrew's... Because it's Kate stroke Andrew because they're joined, you see, so that's how that works. Kate stroke Andrew's time had elapsed since his last visit. It had been less than 24 hours in his own time frame. But the lump on his new friend's back had grown considerably since their previous encounter. It was now the size of a newborn baby, and the shapes of its limbs beneath the taut skin were even more defined. And was that the outline of a face? You seem to know a lot about time travel, Guidry said. No, far from it, Andrew laughed. Everyone here knows about time travel. We learn about it in school. Many, many years ago, we had the means to go back to a whole variety of times. His eyes saddened. But that was before number one was destroyed and put an end to all of that. Number one. Guidry's mind flitted away from the delightful suction of Kate's mouth on his dick. It's what they call the time gadget back in the day. Andrew was forced to shout as the DJ changed music tracks and the din grew inexplicably louder. My first prototype, Guidry thought. What was that? Andrew cupped his free hand to his ear. I said, I want you to tell me everything. Everything? Andrew looked at him puzzled. How much time have you got? Guidry looked at Andrew with a puzzled expression, as if trying to figure out a particularly difficult conundrum. Well, all of it, I guess, he replied. That's it. That's all. It does get very steamy after that. It gets, in fact, well, not so, just downright vulgar, actually. There's lots of moistness, so I thought I better stop it there. So
I cannot wait to get my signed copy so I can start reading it. And then you're going to tell me that as soon as I, you know, finish reading Flanagan, you'll send it to me, right?
Yeah. How are you getting on with Flanagan, by the way? Have you opened it yet?
I've opened it a few times. I'm going to have to actually.
Well, you know what's going to happen.
You're going to.
you're gonna get the new improved copy before you've even read the first version. So
there's
all the excitement.
Really
the new cover for Flanagan is. Oh wait, while you see the new one, it is absolutely phenomenal. It's the same sort of theme, but it's done with a little bit of a twist. It's good. It's good.
Awesome, awesome. I'm looking forward to it. And you just imagine how pretty all of them will look on your shelf, and they all kind of, you know, similar. Yeah, I'm excited. I am.
Six of the nine done, and one is on its way. It'll be done this weekend, and then there's just two more to go. But they all are they all just look, you know, sexy as all hell. So I'm excited, and it's one of those things, you know. People, it's a bit self indulgent. To be honest, you know, I was quite happy with my books being, you know, out and about with other publishers. It's actually my agent said, no, you need to bring them all in together, put them all under Hellbound, and, you know, do that. So
that's
what I'm doing. Just doing as I'm told, you know. But
yeah, because you're really good at that, doing what you're told, right?
Moving on.
Oh, you know.
Moving on.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left. I'm not even sure how much time we have left. But I was going to ask
sorry.
You.
Sorry, I don't got much time at all. No, I only got a few minutes left. Oh, you know, I was so captivating as well.
You are. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you have Valentine's Day plans this year, what you're planning on doing for Valentine's Day.
No.
Oh man, really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. We are getting away for the day. I keep trying to talk the boyfriend into like not coming home at all on Sunday, but
Where are you going somewhere nice or just out?
We're going to Gatlinburg, the Melting Pot. We have reservations for the Melting Pot,
that's lovely.
I'm excited.
Lovely.
I don't want to come home. I like, you know, we can just walk up and down the strip there in Gatlinburg, which is just beautiful, and they have all the shops, and it's awesome, and you know, it gets us away from the children, and there's nothing better right now.
you really do not like your children, do you? You really hate them.
You know,
and quite
I
right
love
to.
Them.
Quite right to.
I have them. DCF, if you're listening, I love my children.
Mm-hmm.
But they are, you know, they're children, and they're annoying, and yeah. But I love them, and I have to. But it's so much fun, you know, especially right
now.
I think they tag team us, you know, like we'll have one all day, and then
mm-hmm.
that one will go to bed or go to work, and then the other one will pop up. And it's like they just perfectly timed to so we have no free time or alone time together at all.
Yeah.
Except for at bedtime, and then by then,
really, because
tired.
Well, my son works, so he's out at work all day, and he comes home, and then we have 5 minutes, and then he's off doing his thing. My daughter, I'm boring myself now. Do you know? She's at school all day. She comes home and she's upstairs and doing a fit. It's like, seriously, this is like. You know, I have to trundle upstairs to go and see them. You know, we try and certainly with my daughter try and eat together. You know, a couple of nights a week. But I suppose as they get older, they don't want to hang out with parents. Oh, so your kid does though, doesn't he?
He does.
He still likes
hanging
out with you.
He does, yeah. Tonight we had a nice dinner, and I was doing the dining room, and I called him down to dinner, and we sit as a family, and, you know, we could tell right away he was kind of moody, but he didn't really say why, and he's eating a couple bites,
uh-oh.
And then he brings his schoolwork down with him, and, you know, we just talk like we normally do, and then all of a sudden he slams his book down, and he, like,
hops and pops up the stairs. no idea why, but it's like, okay, you know, I mean, but moody teenagers. Oh, that was not a fun time. Don't know what that was all about.
With my daughter, because she's reached that age now, and she's been moody, and it's like, are you sure everything's all right? Everything okay at school? Yes, I'm fine. And then it's like, the sad thing is, she actually, she started her monthlies. She started them on Valentine's Day last year, so it's coming up to the anniversary of that.
Year.
So that's
womanhood.
I know. It's flown by. Because I said to her after the first one was over, I said, you know, just look on the bright side, you know, another 40 years and they'll be all over and done with. So there you go. Cheered her right up.
I'm sure it did.
So, anywho, and it seems to you that say we are out of time. So we're going to have to go. We are going to have to say goodnight, Xtina. So goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Blue jeans, baby, with your big blue eyes. Don't want you looking at other guys. Got to make you give me one more chance. I can't keep still, so baby, let's dance. Well, the blue jean bop, it's a bop for me. Well, it's a bop, it's a dungaree. You dip your hip, free your knee. Squeal on your heel, baby, one, two, three. Well, the blue jean bop, blue jean bop, baby. Blue jean bop, blue jean bop, baby. Blue jean bop, baby, won't you bop with jean? Bop, yeah, bop! Well, my heart starts a-hopping like a kangaroo. My feet do things I've never done before. Well, blue jean, baby, give me more, more, more. Well, blue jean bob, blue jean bob, baby. Blue jean bob, blue jean bob, baby. Blue jean bob, baby, won't you bob the jean? Rock it again, blue cat, go! Baby, won't you buy the jeans?
Blue cap, buy the jeans now, let's go!
A blue jean, baby, won't you buy a blue jean?